you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome back to another episode of Art and Dressing Times. It's my pleasure to have Dr. Eric Carlstrom back on the show. Dr. Carlstrom is an emeritus professor of geography at California State University. His primary website is 9/11 New World Order. Dr. Carlstrom, how are you doing this evening?
Very good, Tim, and it's good to be with you and talk to you. I just add that I actually, since I retired in 2011, I've been maintaining five websites, and they are 911nwo.com that you mentioned, also naturalclimatechange.org, which falls right into my field looking at climates of the past, and another one that I've been working on a lot since I started it in 2016 is gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com, and then two others are San Luis Valley waterwatch.com. And finally, my music website is ericcarlstrom.com. So I've kind of tried to expand my my teaching horizons since retiring from 30 years of teaching at three universities in these areas that I think are very important for all of us. So basically, these are free digital libraries full of information that I've posted. Many, including articles that I've written and even series of articles that I've written on these topics. So tonight I was hoping we could, I just recently decided to revisit and watch some of the interviews that David McGowan, the late David McGowan, unfortunately, wrote about his great books, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, Laurel Canyon, Covert Ops, and the Dark Heart of the Hippie Dream. That's 2014. But that is this that followed his darker book called Programmed to Kill, The Politics of Serial Murder, which came out in 2002. Now, this guy, David McGowan, did you ever have a chance to interview him? I think you did, didn't you, Tim?
Yeah, he was actually my very first episode. My program was Dave McGowan. He was my first guest.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I just re-listened to that interview, Tim, and he's just a sterling American, I think a bachelor's in psychology, but he went on to a career in construction, and I think he was a general contractor, but his passion was doing research. And
yes,
lived near Laurel Canyon. He was born in 1959, so he missed the 60s, but he loved the music, and so he got into researching what actually happened during the 60s. And he came out with this book, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, that completely blows away the intelligence cover story for what happened in those years in terms of the manufactured, as it turns out, counterculture, hippie movement, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. He goes into the, naming the names of the stars, like Jim Morrison, and ties them in with the military intelligence community to show that basically this was a psychological operation on the whole country. And, you know, he has such a wonderful presence. He's got kind of a wry sense of humor. Very low key, wry sense of humor.
Very approachable too.
Just a great American, really. And what he did, Tim, was to me phenomenal, because I lived through those years. I graduated from high school in 1967, graduated from college in 1971, and so I watched all of this unfold, you know, with the music scene. And as a guitar player myself, I was very drawn, of course, to the music. And until I read his book, I have to admit, I had no clue that we had been fooled, we as a nation and as a world, had been fooled on such a colossal scale. And to me, this is a very cautionary tale, because it's possible then for the military intelligence establishment to do these psychological operations on the world and get scot-free clean away with it. And so this is kind of what I was hoping to talk about, and then add maybe the darker wrinkle of his 2002 book, Program to Kill, The Politics of Serial Murder. See, he was able to, through his research of mainline sources, to dig down under the surface and conclude that these serial killings actually had a lot in common with the Phoenix program, which is a CIA program in the Vietnam War between 1967 and 1972, in which the U.S. military and intelligence targeted this elements of the civilian population that they regarded as a threat to American hegemony in the region. You know, we had to save Vietnam from internal aggression. That was the buzzword, which of course is just, you know, typical colonial invasion occupation, and a horrendous, hideous war in which 2 to 3 million Southeast Asians were killed between about 1952 and 1975, and a good 55,000 to 60,000 Americans. So this was the very, very dark backdrop of the 60s that I remember, was, you know, my friends and neighbors and cousins going off to Vietnam and getting killed in what seemed to be a very, very, very absurd and senseless war. I mean, this is a war against a nation of rice farmers, you know, who wouldn't know the difference between communism and capitalism. They don't know how to read. They don't, you know, I mean, basically very primitive culture. But we were going to go stamp out the communists. And in those days, of course, the evening news would show the bloody carnage. So it didn't take long for the American people to say, you know, let's call a halt to this. And then when the American people questioned the policies of the military-industrial complex, the RAND Corporation and these other groups had a ready response. Let's co-opt and sabotage and neutralize the internal dissent. We'll suppress it. We'll neutralize it with this counterculture movement, and we'll control it. And we will control the flow of drugs and the sex, drugs, and even the music industry. So as it turns out, this is all a concoction of the military-industrial complex, as you know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, not funny, ha-ha, but funny in a strange way, is like in World War II, when Life magazine showed a dead soldier on the beaches, I think it was Iwo Jima or something, there was a dead body partially buried in the sand. There was outrage by it. Because the media was very much controlled during the Second World War, with the so there was a lot of censorship. People didn't see the horror of war, the carnage, the destruction. You know, the face blown off or burned bodies. But in the Vietnam War, of course, television had progressed to the point where there was a television set in almost every home in America. And everyone would watch the evening news, this half an hour of news, you know, where Walter Cronkite would tell you how it was, what was going on. And although we all know that the government and the CIA were at that point very well intertwined, and, you know, they worked together, and there's a lot of control there, yet they let the broadcast go through. It almost like they anticipated, you know, the reaction of the public – particularly of young people, to this war, and they were prepared to exploit it. You know, this was almost like a traumatic experience. They used the war, had its own objectives, not what we're told to the American people, of course, but they also knew that they would use this war as sort of a traumatic experience that would rend American society and create a generational conflict. You know,
absolutely true. And believe me, I lived through that. It was very intense. It wasn't a good time. You know, they talk about how what a great time it was. You know, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. But I remember it very well. From the beginning of the 60s, in 1960, I was 11 years old. And in 1961, we had the farewell address of President Eisenhower, warning us about the military-industrial complex and the scientific elite that were commandeering public policy even at that time. And then a few months later, we had the new president, John F. Kennedy, giving his speech, which now I think is famous. It's called The President and the Press. And he's talking about the fact that, let's see if I've got the word, if I've got the
Is this a secret society speech?
Yes, this is the one, you know, secrecy, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, blah, 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 blah. And he goes on to talk about this incredibly evil conspiracy that is in the world, and he describes it quite accurately. This is 1961. And indeed, we have been fighting that conspiracy since even before then. And if we look at the work of Lieutenant, I think he was Colonel, the liaison officer between the military and the CIA, 1955 to 1963, we see that the CIA was destabilizing nations all over the world, even in that time frame, including friends and enemies.
I'm sorry, you broke up there. Was that Fletcher Prouty?
Yeah, L. Fletcher Prouty.
Okay.
His book, The Secret Team, the CIA and its allies in control. Okay, that was published in 1973. It was starting to sell well. And then the CIA apparently decided it was kind of a black eye for them. They went and seized and confiscated every single copy in the world, showing their reach. So I think with that book, and he was the ultimate insider, we can look back and say the CIA took control of the U.S. government back in the mid-50s, somewhere in the mid-late 50s. And they've been destabilizing this country and other countries ever since, because they are working for their paymasters, the central banks of the world, the international bankers. They're not working for the American people at all.
Yeah, Fletcher Prouty is an interesting case because he was the liaison. His connections to intelligence date as far back as the Second World War, and because of that, he never signed a confidentiality agreement.
Uh-huh.
Before they had that procedure, so he was able to publish that book without any editing from the CIA or the Defense Department. But as you say, they were able to suppress it. Yeah.
Right. Right. And of course, now then there's another wrinkle that comes in. Again, 2020 hindsight, things that I would not have known as a child or as a teenager, that in the 50s, even going back to World War II, the CIA and its predecessors were involved with the military in all these scientific mind control programs, MK Ultra, Bluebird, Artichoke, MK Search, you know, the Macy conferences, et cetera. And a big part, and of course, they inherited that that interest again from the Nazis, who were imported over here with Operation Paperclip, and from the Brits very much with their Tavistock Institute. So the CIA was doing all these top secret mind control experiments on all kinds of drugs and the effects of electromagnetic frequencies and bioweapons, et cetera. And this is top secret, but this, as it turns out, as we look back, this then very much was used, the knowledge from these top scientists in league with the military and the CIA was used in the Kubark torture manual of 1963 and 1985, which is the enhanced interrogation manual. But, and of course, that's used in, you know, Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, et cetera, even today. And what we see in the 60s then at the Altamont rock festival, et cetera, is, you know, these people like Owsley, who's a military or CIA guy, just handing out massive amounts of LSD to the young concert goers, likewise at Woodstock. So you have, in effect, then expanded now the MKUltra mind control experiments from the hospitals and the campuses to the open outside world, and targeted now an entire generation, especially, which happened to be my generation. So I have some feelings about all this now. It was chaotic in the extreme. It was criminal in the extreme, what happened. And the people who were guilty have never really been taken to account, because there has been so much suppression of the truth and so much kind of rewriting of history through these cover stories. This is why we really need the work of people like David McGowan to excavate what really happened. And then we're still nowhere near bringing the people to justice who should be brought to justice. And we might find that that includes some of the rock stars. We might find that it would include some of the parents of the rock stars who were admirals and intelligence agents. We might find that it's a whole system which is rogue, which is criminal, which is, I guess you could say it's the American empire using its power techniques at home and abroad to police the empire. And what's so fascinating, is David McGowan figured out that there's a lot of similarities, actually, if you look at the structure of these serial killings between the late 60s and the early 80s, a lot of similarities between the Phoenix program in Vietnam, 1967 to 1972, in which, the U.S. military and intelligence establishment killed at least 20,000 to 80,000 civilians in order to pacify, quote unquote, the civilian population. And of course, even then we lost the war. But in developing this bureaucratic system, the Phoenix program, by which all elements of society cooperate to round up dissidents, quote unquote, and then interrogate, torture, and kill them, which is what they did over there. Turns out that this is also the model for the Department of Homeland Security. If we look at the work of Douglas Valentine, who wrote the book on the Phoenix program in 1990, and then a fascinating book in 2017 called The CIA as Organized Crime, how illegal operations or how secret operations or covert operations corrupt the United States and the world. Now, that book is probably the biggest single eye opener you could get, as to how the world works. And you're talking about spies who are highly financed and highly coordinated, destabilizing all parts of the world. And so now the American empire has what? Its intelligence agencies like the CIA have agreements with every other intelligence agency in the world, as we've now got the empire, the full spectrum dominance. We have 800 military bases around the world. We have our military troops in 160 out of 190 countries. So, this has worked. But what we don't see is the hidden costs or the unacknowledged costs. How many people have been tortured and murdered to get to this point? How many Americans have been tortured and murdered? And this word is called democide. It's when government murders its own civilians. And of course, Russia's Soviet Union's famous for having killed 66 to 120 million of its own citizens in its reign of terror. Likewise, the communist Chinese, 100 plus million of their own citizens. But I'm guessing, Tim, that the U.S. government has killed many, many, many millions of its own citizens, not least of which would be in non-consensual human experimentation programs, which, of course, President Clinton acknowledged in about 1995. He acknowledged at least 500,000. But I think the number is extraordinarily higher. And now I'm speaking as a targeted individual, quote unquote, hostile targeting at least since 2013. So as I read through all these programs, COINTELPRO, Phoenix program, MH Chaos of the CIA, and look at these serial killers and look at looking at the weird scenes inside the canyon, what we see is all of this is a manifestation of empire and that the gang stalking electronic torture, quote unquote, program is just a result of the last 70 years of U.S. suppression of internal dissent or, you know, whistleblowers or political enemies. In fact, what we have is a totalitarian government, a fascist totalitarian government with a veneer, with a pretend, you know, it's like lipstick on a pig, pretending for years to be a democracy. But in fact, of course, dissent is the lifeblood of democracy. Without dissent, you don't have democracy. What you have is totalitarian rule. And I would argue that since the 50s, that is exactly what we've had in this country. And as somebody who was active in protesting the war in Vietnam myself, you know, fairly active, I didn't, you know, drop out of, you know, everything else to do that, but I was very against it. You know, I might have got on that list, that enemies list with the MH chaos included 300,000 Americans. That was a secret CIA program in the United States where CIA operatives were coming on campuses and taking pictures of every little group that was there and smiling. And we knew they were on campus. Likewise, the FBI with their COINTELPRO counterintelligence program, which was running 1958 to 1972. And the only reason it stopped, it was highly secret, was that a group of quote unquote activists broke into a FBI building and took files showing the kind of targeting of American citizens that they were doing, and then shared those with newspapers. And then it became known finally that between 1958 and 1971, the FBI, as, you know, kind of political policeman of the country, had targeted and killed 28 Black Panthers, Jean Seberg, the beautiful actress who was a bit of a civil rights activist, probably Ernest Hemingway, probably Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, because they wanted to destroy, neutralize a leftist political movement, which would involve, you know, the blacks getting some tiny little piece of the pie. So they hated leftist movements. It was always a corporatist, fascist wing of the government, you know, since its inception for the FBI in the early 20th century. And now I connect these dots, Tim, and I say, okay, well, you look at these policies. And I've got a couple posts I can mention for your audience there that lay this out, really, and give a timeline. One's called From Operation Garden Plot, 1968 to present, to the Phoenix Program and CIA's MH Chaos, to Rex 84, that's a readiness exercise, 1984, that gave us the FEMA camps, to 9/11, to DHS, Department of Homeland Security, to U.S. NORTHCOM, which has been running this part of the world, these kind of domestic operations in this part of the world, and then : the multiple decade DOD, CIA, DHS plan for perpetual war against dissidents, quote unquote, also known as counterterrorism and gang stalking, comma, totalitarian military dictatorship and martial law. So in this post, I draw heavily from a couple books, one of which is called Police State America, U.S. Military Civil Disturbance Planning, 2002 by Tom Burkhardt, and another one, War at Home, Covert Action Against U.S. Activists and What We Can Do About It by Brian Glick, 1991. It's all there. It's all documented. And yet, could you give me an estimate of the number of people, what percentage of the American public you think is aware of, say, Operation Garden Plot, Cable Splicer, COINTELPRO, Phoenix Program, MH Chaos, any number of these programs? I would guess 99% of the Americans don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there might be some understanding of MK Ultra because if it's Hollywood, treatment in Hollywood, and maybe COINTELPRO, but even they don't understand the depth of that. MK Ultra is kind of understood in sort of a cartoonish way. You know, it's mind-controlled assassins, robotically controlled, in these things. Where, although that might have been an element to it, it was a multifaceted, multi-layered program where I think with, 150 sub-projects, media campaigns. A good example is one project that was exposed was Sub-Project 58, which was the Life magazine May 5th, 1957 cover about the magic mushroom introducing the wonders of psychedelic drugs to the American people. And that was exposed as a part of an MK Ultra project involving Gordon Wasson of J.P. Morgan Bank and the Time Life Media Empire and the CIA. So that there you get sort of this overlapping relationship between banking, publication, and CIA, you know, the publishing world and CIA. You know, so you have so and you mentioned, you know, a lot of people going on campus and taking pictures of dissidents or people of, you know, of questionable loyalty or activists. And of course, it wasn't just people showing, it wasn't like FBI agents were showing up, you know, wearing their hats so everyone knows who they are, as they did in the 60s, you know. It's people infiltrating these groups, you know, forming proxy, not fake groups, you know, controlled opposition, like Gloria Steinem working, you know, being recruited by Cord Meyer to inform on activists and also take the take dissidents or opposition to government in a certain direction, desired direction, and so you have this, you know, sort of this dialectic that's being managed the whole time. At the same time, they're funding, you know, perhaps, you know, National Review magazine and Playboy magazine. At the same time, the same interests are creating Ms. magazine with a feminist. So the whole culture is being manipulated. And one thing that's interesting is what's necessary for this is mass communication and technology. And one of the reasons why you simply couldn't have had something like this in the previous decades was you didn't have mass communication yet. And mass communication, once that was, you know, refined and developed, it was always refined and developed with the eyes of with the idea of controlling and manipulating society. You know, this began with radio and the Princeton Radio Project and their World of Worlds broadcast, which was intentional. It was an experiment. And at that point, mass communication became a strong interest of the military and intelligence establishment to manipulate. It's a worldview, world warfare, as they called it. But most people simply aren't aware. One thing that's amazing you get in some of these books is just sort of how the bureaucratic nature of it all. You know, how many alphabet soup agencies, how much money, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people make it their job every day to do this. to screw with the minds of the public. It's their profession, you know.
And to wage war against the public. And it's in their documents that they are targeting and neutralizing and eliminating members of the American public that they regard as a quote-unquote threat. And, of course, the terms change over the decades, you know. First it's serial killers, and then it's the war on terrorism, and then, you know, it's the war on communism. And now, of course, it's going to be the war on COVID. We're going to have contact tracers now to track and trace everybody.
Yeah.
But what we have here is a war of the elite, that is to the corporatocracy and the bankers, using the government infrastructure, the agencies of the government, against the American public. And this is, of course, so obvious now that they're officially targeting, whites.
Yes, yeah. It's funny how it changes because, you know, kind of when the establishment was like, I guess, right of center or conservative in the 60s, the targets were leftist dissidents. Now the target are right-wing dissidents because now the corporate culture is now leftist. In a way, but this right left distinction really again is part of that controlled dialectic. It doesn't mean anything really, at a meta level.
You know, for me the simplest way to understand how the left, and I've always voted Democrat in my life until recently, mm-hmm. when they became outrageous, insane communists. The way to understand this now, I think, is that the left, quote unquote, has been taken over by the cultural Marxists, the communists.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is, in fact, parallel exactly with the objectives of the United Nations and the UN Agenda 21 and 2030. So now you have all of that power and money behind this left, of course, George Soros and all the Jewish billionaires are pouring their money into this, and the other side, too. But the left especially is now being used to take down America. And it's very good, I think, to see beyond that dialectic. But the reason I'm so interested in looking at this information is to see how over the decades since the 50s, the military and the intelligence apparatus has targeted the American public as enemies. And they've done it with documents. And, you know, they've got all these different laws and whatnot that are on this article that I just mentioned. Let me just read a little bit here from the introductory remarks of this guy, Tom Burkhart, in Police State America, U.S. Military Civil Disturbance Planning. And we'll find that the civil disturbances were created, like the riots in Watts, et cetera, in the 60s, by this same establishment. Again, we have a very, very tight fascistic control. Here's what Burkhart says. U.S. military training in civil disturbance, quote unquote, suppression, which targets the American public, is in full operation today, 2002. The formulation of legitimizing doctrine, the training, the, quote, tactics and techniques of civil disturbance suppression, and the use of non-lethal weaponry, that's directed energy and neuroweaponry now, are ongoing, financed by your tax dollars. The overall operation is called Garden Plot, which was documents that were drawn up in 1968 after 3 or 4 years of horrendous racial riots in America's cities. America's cities were burning back then, and I recall that quite well, 64, 5, 6, 7, and 8. The operation is called Garden Plot. There is a direct relationship between economic globalization, aka colonialism, and the militarization of police. As the U.S. empire is consolidated both inside and outside America's borders, it takes on the same essential characteristics inside and outside America's borders. In other words, the domestic population is the enemy. Military weaponry, surveillance equipment, and training modalities are adopted by domestic police forces, and regular military forces are used for policing roles. And not to mention, I can add, as somebody who's been a targeted individual and watching this very carefully since 2013, they have all kinds of now civilian military operations, which go back to the 60s too, but you have all kinds of neighborhood watch and citizens on patrol and vigilantes now who are joining in on these operations. But then he says, for example, the CIA, which has now captured and controls the FBI, now more or less admits it works at home as well as abroad, indeed, as it has always, while the FBI now works extensively abroad as well as at home. So in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s and onward, the FBI's COINTELPRO and the CIA's MH Chaos were ostensibly launched to investigate communist KGB influence over groups that fought for black rights and against the Vietnam War. That was the pretext used to infiltrate and disrupt the radical social movements. I wouldn't even say they're radical. We just wanted democracy of the 60s and 70s. So I was in this war. So there's been a lot of attempts to kind of confuse what happened. I was on the campus, University of Massachusetts, where my brother teaches in the biology department just a couple of years ago. And I looked at some of the posters there, Tim, and they're talking how there was a little bit of, you know, dissent and campus turmoil in the 60s. Oh, my God. It was it was horrible. It was, it was a war. And now we find out that who we were fighting was the American military and intelligence establishment. So if you want to know who you're fighting with the COVID-19, well, who's behind Operation Crimson Contagion? The whole U.S. interagency. They were predicting what would happen if a virus was leaked from a Chinese laboratory to America back in the early part of 1919. So in other words, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the Rockefeller Foundation, with the U.S. interagency are behind this. The actual coronavirus, which is, I think, a bioweapon, I think that's becoming clear, although there's been a lot of confusion about this. It first started at Fort Detrick, Maryland, which, of course, is a biological safety level 4 lab. And then it moved to Chapel Hill, South North Carolina, biosafety level 3 lab. And with Fauci and Burke's participation, they're doing this gain of function on these little viruses and mRNA. And then it moves over to China, probably in an Olympic Games in the fall of 2019. And then it went to the Wuhan lab and then it was released. So at what point it got souped up to include the little strands of AIDS and all the potential neuroweapons, et cetera, in it, I can't say whether it happened in the U.S. or China. But I can say, based on Operation Crimson Contagion, that the whole U.S. interagency establishment was doing a drill, which considered this very same possibility. Well, we know that 9/11 and 7/7 and these other major operations are simply drills that flip live. Well, this is exactly what happened. We had this, you know, 10-year sequence of position papers from the World Economic Forum and the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. That's a main conduit for the Rockefeller Foundation. Their lockstep document of 2010, and then in 2017 they have their SPARS pandemic document, which gives a script for the whole thing with the SARS-CoV-2, including how the government is going to react, and you know this percentage and that percentage is going to get infected, and all this is going down according to script. So what
doesn't the SPARS thing foresee a reaction to the so-called vaccination?
I haven't read the document yet, but I
it's kind of eerie because I think it, Alex Jones did a thing on it.
Yes,
and how SPARS, they foresee how the 6 months or 12 months after there's max vaccinations, there's horrible neurological damage that starts to pop up. And this just discredits all the politicians and everything. So well, it's kind of scary.
They're going to blame it on the politicians.
Yeah, but yeah.
In fact, like many of these operations, you know, the real people who think about it are coming from the think tanks and, mm-hmm. you know, Johns Hopkins and the Rockefeller Foundation and the World Economic Forum. But they're going to saddle the Faucis and the Newsoms and the Cuomos with the blame.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's, I think, what's in the document. But my point is that, you know, targeting the American public as the enemy is not new. And so many Americans are so ignorant about what has come before that they can't conceive that the government is anything but our friend. I would suggest that the government, based on my experience and research, the government is more like a psychopathic parent. It's more like a abusive parent, and it has a friendly personality and a demonic personality, and we're supposed to kind of adjust to both. So that puts us in kind of a state of dissociation. We don't know how to respond, and I think that's quite deliberate. It's all trauma-based psychological warfare, again coming out of MKUltra and all these other mind control programs. So I think that the past is the key to the present. As they say in geology, that's kind of an axiom in the earth sciences. But I think it is also an important axiom in these matters as well. Unless you understand what has gone before, you're not equipped to interpret what's happening now. And I would, I think people need to, these shows are great. We can pass on some ideas. For your audience, I suggest, that's the point A. That's the entry point. And then the follow-up is to go to my website and read this post. And then the follow-up to that is to read the books that I'm summarizing. The follow-up to that is to read some other books, because the role of citizenship requires an active participation. It calls for responsibility as well as, privileges. Yes, we have rights, but we have responsibilities. And if we don't take these responsibilities, we lose these rights, as now is happening on a very rapid, colossal scale.
Yeah, it's kind of recognizing the system for what it is, the beast system, and then acting accordingly. Because one thing is, you'd think if we do live in a republic where there's freedom of speech and there's dissent and we have elections and the public is informed and decides who to vote for, what policies support based on the information that they're given, that dissent wouldn't be seen as being disloyal. It's a natural and expected reality in a free political system, where they're, the Democratic Republic, where you have two or more parties, competing parties, and there's free speech and these things, and also a constitution which guarantees certain rights and privileges and immunities. But there's a sense that there's people within the national security state itself, they have a certain, psychopathic or twisted view of things, that they see everything in terms of control and manipulation, and anything that gets in the way of their agenda, which then they package or see as national security or U.S. interest or whatever, which are really just globalist or oligarchic interest, wrapped in the American flag, instead of saying, well, we're carrying out policies which are upsetting a lot of people. A lot of a good portion of the voting public don't see it within their interest or see it as moral or right, you know, this war in Vietnam, or, you know, or the fact that we're spending so much money giving military aid or support to tyrannical regimes in the Middle East, or, you know, we're attached to the hip with Israel and these things. They see it as dissent. They see it as disloyal. They see it as basically their enemies. But a well-balanced sane person would see, well, these people just happen to disagree with the policy. Let's try to convince them on the policy. We can't convince them. Well, then we don't get our policy. But they don't see it that way. You know, they see it. They guess they take it for granted that of their power to rule. To what extent is this? I mean, I see a lot of this is bureaucratic. It's in the national security state. The military industrial complex is its own interest. You have the banking interest, the financial interest. You have, of course, the Jewish lobby, the Zionists, that faction. And then, of course, you go deeper and deeper. You get higher and higher into the Rothschilds, which probably you could say was probably the origins of Zionism. And you could say that you could throw them in with the Jewish interest. But the whole banking interest, it seems like it's like a hydra. You know, I don't think it's monolithic. But the bottom line is the American public has to at some point face the reality or grow up and look at the reality of the system that has sort of metastasized over the last 80 years in the name of national security.
Yeah, absolutely right. But of course, you know, there is, I think, a spiritual component to this. And we are, as you mentioned, this is the beast system. If you listen to some of the very, very excellent interviews with Catherine Austin Fitz, mm-hmm. who's of the Solidarity Report, you know, she makes that point. She says, we're in World War III. This is the mark of the beast. Don't take the vaccine. Because what they want to do is they want to hook your body up to the Pentagon cloud through the nanotech and the mRNA. They want to rearrange your genetics so that you become a cyborg.
Well, wasn't the guy who was heading up under Trump Warp Speed, wasn't his forte or his interest a brain-computer interface or something?
That's right, Monsef Salawi,
yeah,
from Saudi Arabia, good American from Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
It's always easy to bring these foreigners in to wreck America, you know.
Yeah.
But listen, let's go back to the old days, 1971. I was just graduating from college. Here's Senator Sam Ervin's Senate committee discovering that, quote, well, that military intelligence had set up an intricate surveillance system covering hundreds of thousands of American citizens. The committee discovered that the DOD had assembled computerized files on 18,000 people, including Senator George McGovern and former Massachusetts Governor Francis Sargent. Chief counsel of the subcommittee, Doug Lee, stated, unbelievable. These guys are crazy. We're the enemy. This is civil war they're talking about here. Half the country has been designated as the enemy. Now, I was living this, and I know it. It was very intense. It was a war, but it was a psychological war, and it was a war of oppression and suppression and psyops. And again, the brilliant David McGowan explains how that could happen, how we could be controlled through these operations that would discredit and neutralize, therefore, the anti-war movement.
Well, yeah, there's some talk about that, like in the 1965-64 period, the early days of the Vietnam War, the free speech movement on Berkeley and the anti-war movement was very kind of intellectual and they're clean cut. And they were quoting Thomas Jefferson and natural law, Thomas Aquinas. I mean, you mentioned some of these deaths and some people now think that Thomas Merton was a target of the CIA.
You know, absolutely.
You know, this guy, I guess he was in, I forget where he was, but he was just writing books, and this is how they would see it. And I guess anyone they consider who could offer a persuasive argument against their war or their policies was considered a worthy target.
That's right. Yeah, and Hugh Turley and Dave Martin have written an excellent investigative book on this, and the case of Vince Foster, which is mm-hmm. another political murder. If you start going through these murders, you know, Forrestal, the former, you know, and you find out who did it, who done it, and when and why, And you'll see that Zionist influence throughout, but you'll also see the CIA influence throughout. And I equate them very much. It's kind of one octopus to me. But yeah, 64, 65, these were pivotal years. And again, I was there. I remember Kennedy's speech. You know, I remember John F. Kennedy as being a great president. And I remember Eisenhower, and I remember these riots, and I remember the insanity of the Vietnam War and the intensity of the cultural conflict. Of course, the Beatles had, taken the nation by storm. That was the British invasion. And a lot of the young men wanted to wear long hair, mm-hmm. And then the older generation, found this very threatening. And so part of it was, of course, to separate the generations and have a generational war. But they also wanted, of course, to have a race war. And that's what these riots were about. I think they were instigated. And then we will find that a lot of these that these instigated race riots then became the fuel, the fodder, the excuse for MKUltra programs that would now combat violence, you see. And they would do it with lobotomies and chemical means to wipe out your brain. And it was done under the, the pretext of combating violence. And, there's an excellent series or an excellent movie called The Minds of Men by Aaron and Melissa Dykes, which
almost four hours.
And she really goes through this, and she talks about how this happened. And it talks about some of the major psychiatrists and psychologists involved. And they were just on the take. These guys would do anything for a grant. And the Pentagon, of course, had lots of money. So, people like John West at UCLA and Irvin Marks and Sweet over on the East Coast, these guys were really the Joseph Mengele's of the post-World War II era. And there are many such today working with the Pentagon. Joseph Mengele, who were ready to invade since 1971, 50 years ago. But the trajectory is the same. The people, the institutions, the agencies are moving towards total control. And it has always been a total control, I would suggest, in the background. That has been the goal. And there's always been a pushback from the American citizens. And then always a clamp down, a totalitarian fascist clamp down, such as we saw in the 60s. And we're seeing now everybody's wandering around with face masks on, and you have to have social distance. You have to stay in your homes. This, I think, is part of that same trajectory, which is to take out the American people and remove them as being a force. So now the corporatocracy can replace, the Walmarts and the Home Depots can replace small business in America. So you have this minority at the top of the pyramid who have this instinctive hatred for the majority, and especially for Christianity. And now we can go to Home Depot, but, so many can't go to church, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we need to see what's happening now in the context of what happened before. And we need to realize that what's happening now is a psychological war, as well as an economic war, as well as at least two fronts of bio warfare. And that it's coming down from on high, the Rockefeller Foundation, the UN, the World Economic Forum, and they have their agencies as fronts, like the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, and they have their agents who are front men like Fauci and Bill Gates. But it's all a very coordinated attempt to consolidate wealth in the hands of the extreme few and to take wealth from the people. So you need to look at America as the history between a contest between wealth or money and people. And right now the people are people are in trouble. The wealth has got the upper hand, it would seem.
Yeah, I mean, even from the days of Operation Mockingbird, which never ended, but, obviously, if you just look at the relationship between someone like Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization, Johns Hopkins, the Imperial College of London, not to mention the multifarious health departments of the states, they're all tied into the same funding source, and they're all connected, and you can draw out the schematic, and you can prove that there indeed was a relationship between these organizations, and that these people are profiting, from the crisis. If you look at the transfer, there's been a huge transfer of wealth since last March. Whether it's Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates, the huge corporations, you know, the stock market has ballooned and, you know, in nominal value. But the small businesses, you know, are being decimated, you know, as you suggested, on purpose. All this, you know, that's one thing that the economic lockdown succeeded in doing. And now you have a situation where states are no longer reliant on revenue produced by the local economies. They're relying on continual flows of federal relief dollars that are printed out of thin air and are collecting interest because it's borrowed money. And so states are now are losing their financial autonomy. They'll lose their sovereignty. And that's why so many of these local governments have able to maintain states of emergency because they're getting relief funding. They're being bribed to extend it without any concern, you know, to the physical damage that they're doing to the economy. Because at the end of the day, in order for economy to function, people have to work and produce things. You just can't get checks all, you know, three or four times a year and live off that. They've created a very perverse system, but I do think it's intentional to destroy the legacy economy. In fact, Whitney Webb has done some remarkable journalism on that, where a lot of this was foreseen about, you know, moving to an AI economy, competing with China, creating a social credit system, doing away with legacy systems like retail businesses and personally owned automobiles. So a lot of what Americans have been taking for granted about what the American way of life is all about, that's on the chopping block. And because that's this crisis, this traumatic, you know, pandemic that they created has enabled them to do that. He's given them the cover. But it's fairly obvious. I'm surprised that more people haven't seen through it. But that's the effect of mind control, which I think is really underestimated.
Right. You know, I've done, some work on this as well on my gang stalking mind control cults.com website. And I have transcribed lectures, I've transcribed lectures from Dr. James Giordano recently, who's a neuroscientist. He calls himself a neuroweaponologist and a neuroethicist at Georgetown University, who works as a contractor with DARPA and the European Union Human Brain Project on ethics, quote unquote, which, of course, neuroethics is an oxymoron. You start invading somebody else's brain, mm-hmm. and yet it's legal because the technology is so advanced, we don't have laws that protect people's brains from, what should I say, Joseph Mengele devil types like Giordano. He says the brain is the next battlefield, and we are targeting certain segments of the population in order to, so I can, these guys' egos is off the chart. This will help me improve my signals intelligence, SIGINT, and my neurointelligence, and all the different kinds of spy intelligence things. And Dr. James Canton giving a talk a couple years ago at for the Special Operations Command, U.S. SOCOM, with the Softworks and the Jason Group and these elite groups of scientists. He's saying the same thing, you know, and basically admitting that they're doing the gang stalking to target individuals. They have to biohack into their brain to see how their technologies work. So again, now you're into the realm of non-consensual human experimentation. And it's big business. I mean, Giordano says, hey, it's $175 billion annual market share, all this neuroscience and neurotech.
Yeah.
And Canton says it's half a trillion dollars, all this life extension research that we're doing. So again, this nexus of top scientists, brilliant scientists, with the military and intelligence, which has been going on since World War II, and which I've studied and written extensively about, has brought us to this point where people can hack each other's brains and take them over. Now, how much is that actually going on right now? How many of our politicians are being controlled in this manner with, you know, you can get a hive mind, apparently, of several individuals who can lock on through electromagnetic frequencies to another individual and then monitor and actually manipulate their thoughts with these brain-to-brain interface operations, which are now openly admitted. So how many of our politicians are being manipulated in this manner?
It certainly would explain a lot, what I've observed past year.
That's right. Well, see, I know about this because they're trying to do it to me.
Yeah.
and I'm fighting. You know, and so far, I think I haven't knuckled under. But I think the goal is not a pretty one. I think the goal is to turn you into their cyborg slave. And so I look at this as extraordinarily demonic. I look at this as, you know, not only have they crossed the Rubicon to where they've taken, you know, we are the enemies of our government now, but they actually are playing with our humanity, our God-given identities. I think they're moving us towards a post-human world intentionally. And so I say they've passed the line. I say that they're all criminals. In fact, my studies, Tim, show that every president, every head of the CIA, every head of the military, and most of these agencies since Eisenhower should be tried as war criminals, which would be why they're so on guard and afraid of dissidents. Dissidents would be somebody who points these things out, you know, their criminality. So it's like you have a mafia which is got to cover up its last crime against humanity with its next crime against humanity. And so I, you know, my study shows that the gang stalking, electronic torture, non-consensual human experimentation program that we sometimes call gang stalking is the largest black market operations in the history of the world, and it's global. But that now is being superseded by what they're doing with the COVID and the vaccine, which is also neuromanipulations, I think, on a chemical and biological level. So I think they're running for the goalposts now. I think they're looking for, you know, collapsing the nation's economies and even moving us to a post-human world if they can. Now, this is, of course, you know, utterly absurd and ridiculous. I happen to be, you know, very fond of the natural world and humanity. But these people, these lunatics in power, apparently want to have a breakaway civilization where they have immortality. They will be as gods and live forever, like the serpent promised Eve in the garden. And I believe that this really is the spiritual force that animates this particular group. In other words, it's very dark and satanic, and that this is the beast system. And don't take the vaccine. It's the mark of the beast. You can't buy or sell without, you know, the nanotech in your body that hooks you up to the Pentagon cloud so that you can get your digital currency, you know, from the whatever banks, which is like credits on a company store, according to Catherine Austin Fitz. So I think we're at a real watershed moment in human history, and that our species, in fact, is threatened. So, you know, all hands on deck, everybody push back, because if we don't cooperate with these psychopaths, we have a chance still, I think, of turning this around. But meanwhile, we need to know what weapons they have, neuroweapons, directed energy weapons, non-lethal weapons, etc. We need to know who they are. We need to find out what their modus operandi and what their objectives are. And they tell us if we bother to read what they write, you know. You know, we have this guy who from the Hebrew or Jerusalem University. What's his name? Yusuf Noah Harari.
Oh, yeah. Sapiens. Yeah.
Yeah. He has he gave a keynote speech at the World Economic Forum last year, 2020, just about the time that the COVID is coming out in February. And he's saying, OK, the defining equation for the 21st century is something like biological knowledge, something like times computing power times data gives us AHH, which is the ability to hack humans like you hack a computer. So this has been the whole thrust of cybernetics since World War II with Dr. Norbert Wiener, et cetera, and MK Ultra project, subproject 59 of cells, which was to activate the human subject remotely with electromagnetic frequencies and a computer, a supercomputer. And now they've gotten to the point where they can pull this off, and they, with this NSA signals intelligence and their big data and our biological knowledge and our computing power, this is the objective of these madmen, is to actually hook us up into a global brain, a hive mind with the Neuralink of Elon Musk. And then Elon Musk has his 40,000 low Earth orbit satellites. And this breakaway civilization, dare I say, Judeo Masonic Satanists wants the world to themselves, and they're going to radically reduce the population. That's their plan anyway. And this would be the fulfillment of their Talmudic vision. There's not a very sociable group. They're very unsociable. They kind of don't want to share, you know. And here we have this guy, future historian Harari, telling us just that. He's saying we're going to commandeer the evolutionary process, and we're going to replace what was on the Earth now with carbon-based life forms with a, you know, silicon-based synthoids and, you know, androids. And
which is, yeah, which is, says something, because that would explain their war on carbon.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a carbon-based life. Our life is carbon-based, and of course, you and I are carbon-based, and carbon dioxide, which is only 4 in 10,000 molecules, it's a trace gas, but it's a miracle gas, because without carbon dioxide, we don't have photosynthesis and plants don't grow. And so what they've done is they've managed to get everybody to forget their eighth grade biology, if they ever took it, which is that CO2 is a miracle gas.
It's, well, not Greta Thunberg is so passionate. So she's also, sponsored by Davos, by the way. So.
Yeah, you know, they have these icons, you know, Greta Thunberg and AOC, these actresses really who don't know anything. And we're supposed to believe them.
And we're supposed to hate them, too, by the way. Believe them or hate them, and get their attention away from who's pulling the strings.
Yeah, it's really quite phenomenal. And I listened to Brennan, you know, our ex-CIA guy, talk about geoengineering. He can hardly pronounce the words. I taught this stuff. I taught climatology and physical geography and landforms and soils and whatnot. This is in paleoclimatology, geology, quaternary environments. He can't even pronounce these words.
How did a former member of the Communist Party become director of CIA?
This guy is an idiot. This guy is a fool.
And he also wants to put people in jail who disagree with him.
Yes, of course. These guys are psychopaths, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're mind controlled, you know. But I don't think that excuses their behavior.
No.
You know, because we've had Brennan and Clapper and Comey and this band of bandits who have, you know, just destroyed this country, moving pretty fast to destroying it. And, of course, Soros and Gates and these other mega group Jewish billionaires are right in there and, you know, working with these communist groups. People need to understand that communism is not a warm and fuzzy thing. When we have a Bolshevik communist revolution, you know, hundreds of millions of people are killed and tortured. And this is the mindset of this group that wants the world to themselves. Now, personally, I think we need to tell them no in the most forceful of all possible ways. Now, this particular band or tribe has been expelled from 109 countries in the past 2,000 years, and I don't really see another way around it except for to do that again. It might be too late, but it has to be done, because this is like spiders versus flies. And this group has a collective hive mind already, I believe, which is Satan's in control of that. And then we're the individualists, we're the flies. And so this group is always weaving the next web, in this case, the smart cities and the Internet of Things and the 5G and the AI. That's the next web. And, of course, the money system now is going to shift from fiat money to digital money, which goes directly to your body through the Pentagon cloud, et cetera. This is the web that they have now in place. Israel very dominant in all these technologies, and we're supposed to fall into it. So what is happening is everything's being staged now to move us to this new post-human, post-carbon world. Well, this is about as dark and demonic and you would almost say impossible to do, and yet they have some very smart people working on this, and they have the money and the power. And unless, people wake up and say, no, thank you. In fact, not only no, thank you, but you're a criminal and we're going to put you away for attempted mass genocide.
Have they ever heard the word no before?
Well, they've gotten away with a lot, haven't they? They got with the 9/11, the Kennedy assassination, Iran-Contra, right on down the list. This group, you know, we haven't been effective in pushing back against this cabal which is very, very clever. I think they're demonically inspired. I think Satan's actually pretty smart. And they are a hive mind already, I believe. That's what I see in history. And they act as a collective, and they're always working towards this long-term goal of, you know, having their own empire and enslaving everybody else and destroying everyone else. It's a very antisocial group that seems to be driven by hatred. And just the opposite, of course, of the message of Jesus Christ. So, you know, it right goes back to the cross. You know, who killed Jesus Christ? You know, who was Jesus Christ running from in his life? Who did he confront as being the synagogue of Satan and a generation of vipers or a race of serpents? Well, it's the same group, you know. So we can use biblical passages to explain where we're at now. And then to me, the really interesting question is, are we just going to sit back and wait for, you know, the angels and God to come and help us because we don't have a chance against these devils? Or are we going to be smart enough to say no, that Satan and his minions are not welcome, and sorry, you can't depopulate our planet, you can't destroy our biosphere. I mean, you know, these people are really...
if you doubt this, I mean, I think in June, Bill Gates is scheduled to launch a balloon that's going to release particles in the air that to dim the sun.
Well, he's been working on this for a long time, this solar dimming, a cloud whitening thing. I made the connection back in 2011, Tim, as a climatology teacher, that, okay, the real purpose or the real, okay, the global warming thing is, you know, is a gigantic fraud, of course, scientifically, but it serves some very important purposes for the elite. One of which, of course, is to control energy. If you control carbon dioxide, which is the output of burning of fossil fuels, then you can decide who uses energy and who doesn't. And 85% of the world's energy is fossil fuels, coal, gas, and oil. And it's really, if you look at it objectively, it's a tremendous gift from God and from the earth to us. It's basically free. So my thinking has gone full circle on that. But then the other thing about the global warming hoax is they say, OK, we're going to have to, have carbon taxes, and we're going to have austerity. We'll change the UN will be the prototypical government and decides who can't use fossil fuels anymore. And they have targets of zero carbon emissions by 2050 in the Kyoto Protocol and the Copenhagen and Paris and all these UN meetings. But then they have their plan B, and this goes back to 1990s federal documents, which is geoengineering, which is, okay, now we're going to have to figure out ways to block the sun, which is insane, because our whole biosphere and all of life runs based on the sun.
So they got this from a James Bond movie or something?
It's worse. Yeah. It's 1,000 times worse than the worst James Bond. Yeah. And of course, here's this character, Bill Gates, whose father was a eugenicist working with the Rothschilds, and he's into all of these things. He's now the without a college degree, he's now the world's doctor telling who's and he's now an expert on climatology. But what he really wants to do is destroy all non-Jews and take over the planet to have their Jewish utopia. And Jewish Universal Empire, which has been built into their thinking and their writings for thousands of years. So he's kind of the point man. But I would suggest that there really is no Bill Gates. What you have is a possessed individual, an individual possessed by Satan himself. And many of these others I would put in the same category. Now, I wouldn't have always said that, Tim. I was, brought up a Unitarian and, went through different iterations. Mm-hmm. But I now believe that, yes, we have a war here between right and wrong, good and evil, truth and lies. And that God is to come and separate the wheat from the chaff. Do we have a choice? If we see what's happening, do we have a choice? Are there enough of us who are believers, who are firm, who know the facts, who can resist in a meaningful way? That's really a big question in my mind. I don't know what the percentage of Americans is that even knows who the enemy is.
Yeah, I mean, you got to know your enemy to be able to combat it. To combat them, right?
Identify. Yeah, they might think it's Black Lives Matter. They might course, then we get back to the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, Bill Gates, and the Jewish billionaires, and the mega banks, and the corporate establishment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's any coincidence that last year, just when the lockdowns were being lifted, you all of a sudden you had the George Floyd incident and you had the riots, you know.
Well, see, from my point of view, again, in 1968, America was on fire, and these were shot, and a huge riots after that. It's all deja vu for me, you know, and the 1968 Democratic Convention, all hell broke loose at that, and the military was involved in it, and they had their spies involved, you know, just juicing up the conflict, made for TV. So what we see is that our government is not on our side. It's going to have to be the American people. And it could be that decides right at the end. So it could be that the rank and file military are going to see through this, like, and not take the vaccine and not obey orders to kill off their fellow Americans, in which case the military is not going to do the will of this, you know, Rockefeller, Rothschild, satanic plan, the mark of the beast system. So, you know, I hold out some hope that this might happen. And then the mass awakening, which may or may not be happening. I don't know. What do you think? Is there a mass awakening happening thanks to your efforts and efforts of other people like myself who are trying to wake people up?
Well, the bright side is that what they've done in the past 12, 14 months, I think has woken a lot of people up. I think a lot more people realize there's definitely something wrong, and they're not in Kansas anymore, and they never were in Kansas. Mm-hmm. They're waking up to that reality. And so I think, you know, the establishment media, the legacy media, corporate media, these institutions, whether it's the CDC or NIH or the federal government, you know, even the presidency is a joke now. We have a man who is, obviously suffering from dementia. And of course, no one talks about it in the media. At least most of me doesn't talk about it. So in the eyes of millions of Americans, at least maybe perhaps as many as 70 million Americans, is a fraud. Not to mention just this whole, you know, the whole lockdown and COVID restrictions. And so a lot of people, are open to considering these things. And I think as they try to roll out this vaccine, and I think you'll burn through the gullible and the willing, and then you're going to have a staunch resistance of tens of millions of Americans. And then, at that point, I think that's when people are going to say no. And that's when you're going to have a showdown. That'll be the moment of truth.
Let's hope it happens soon, because we've had now over a year of economic lockdown. Mm-hmm. How long can a nation survive that? You know, America is being attacked on so many levels right now. This is obviously, to me anyway, who has studied this, the implementation of the Bavarian Illuminati plan, mm-hmm. you know, of Adam Weishaupt and the Rothschilds and the Sanhedrin of 1776, which was to destroy nations and monarchies and religions and the family and private property in order to remove all institutions that would stand in the way of bringing in their satanic kingdom.
Yeah.
And so this group has been, you know, very, very busy for a long time to bring this about.
Well, they talk about the year is 2030 and you'll own nothing and you'll love it.
Yes.
It's the World Economic Forum.
They do tell you what they're going to do. And they brag a lot. You know, they brag about what they've done. But let me just shift gears, if you don't mind here, Tim. And OK, I taught human ecology for 20 years, which is earth, environment, human interactions. And what I would teach in my, you know, classes, I would teach a number of subjects relating to this, which it's a long story. But let me just talk about what I might teach in the first lecture, which is the earth and human history in a kind of a capsule, in a nutshell. The earth, and I take the scientific view, so people might think I'm a little schizophrenic. I'm a Bible believer, but I also believe in science, and I don't see a big contradiction. Okay, so 4.5 billion years ago, Earth's formed, and, you know, about the same age as the sun, which is an average star in a, you know, huge universe with billions and billions of stars. And for the first 500 million years, essentially no years, it was abiotic. And then we get single-celled organisms about a half a billion years later. And then for the next, 3.5 billion years, mind-numbing simplicity, single-celled organisms, microorganisms, bacteria, et cetera. And then about 600 million years ago, we have the Cambrian explosion in the fossil record. All of a sudden, many, many different forms of life spring into the fossil record. But then since then, last 600 million years, we've had about the same number of species, about 30 million species, with a lot of diversity. But then there's been a turnover. And most of those species, like 99.9%, are gone. They're extinct. And so you have other species take their place in that ecological niche. So humans then come along, the best and the brightest, I do believe, about 100 to 200,000 years ago, based on rates of mutation of mitochondrial cells and from biologists. And in fact, that's really quite a young species in 4.5 billion years. The shark's been around for 400 million years, bacteria for 4 billion years, humans about 100 to 200,000. Maybe I'm a little outdated on those numbers. But the point I'm trying to make is that we have this species diversity, but a lot of turnover, and the average species lasts about 1 to 10 million years. Okay, we have not made it to 1 million years, Homo sapiens. We're still at 100,000 to 200,000. We could go extinct if these lunatics get their way because they want to commandeer the evolutionary process. It's in many of their books, going back to Lord Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells, Zbigniew Brzezinski. This is all brought out with the great interviews with Jay Dyer and Alex Jones just a couple weeks ago, last week, which I've transcribed, showing the plan to mutate humans into a post-human world.
Yeah, as Jay Dyer points out, I think he's right, is since everything is random, then intervening is you're not violating natural law or not playing God because everything is random. There's no theology to it. There's no meaning to it. And that's how they look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's how they look at it. They would be atheists, existentialists, and they would not believe in God. They would not believe that humans are the God's creation or that God's creation is God's creation. They would look, like you say, as everything is being random. Well, so there's a fundamental religious theological difference between that position, which is, we're just one more mutation out of the primordial soup, and they being the wisest, and it was Jonas Salk, the inventor of the polio vaccine, who wrote a book called Survival of the Wisest, mm-hmm. which, of course, is him and his scientific buddies, and he's Jewish. Survival of the wisest is, okay, we're going to take control of the evolutionary process. We're going to introduce mRNA, he says, and change the cells. We're going to play with the birth cycles of women. We're going to look at the whole world now as a big science experiment. Well, that's how they look at us.
Yeah, the world is a laboratory, is that book.
That's right. Yeah. Well, my sense is that, based on my worldview, which is I like life. I think God did a fabulous job of creation. Jesus's commandments in the second covenant are simple, love God and love your fellow man. But they want a new technocratic covenant. That's even in Klaus Schwab.
You can't patent photosynthesis, right? So what good is it?
Well, that's right. It's all based on greed. It's all based on money. It's all based on selfishness. They want to be gods. They want to live forever, just like Eve was told by the serpent. So this particular tribe.
Why would you develop Terminator seeds other than?
Yeah. Totally.
It's like you want to invite disaster. Terminator seeds.
That's right. And we could see this coming down the road. This is Monsanto and the Agent Orange and all these extraordinarily toxic, destructive products of the industrial world that they have, controlled and, like you say, Terminator seeds. Neuralink of Elon Musk. So I think now we're back into the theological realm here. I think that their hive mind wants to pull everybody into their destiny in hell. And what they're trying to do is beat that destiny. Like Jesus said, how can ye escape the damnation of hell in Matthew 23:33? Well, this is, I think, is their plan for how to escape the damnation of hell. They're going to tikkun olam's Hebrew word for reinvent the world. Mm-hmm. They're going to change. They're going to destroy the carbon-based world of gods which, you know, is a long time in the making, I think. There are some people who believe in a short Earth theory of 6,000, 10,000 years, but I believe in the long Earth. But I also believe it's incredible, spectacular creation we should be very grateful for. They hate it. They want to destroy it, and just like they want to destroy us. Well, okay, so that means we have a arch enemy. It's like you say, the worst James Bond movie you could ever imagine. We have a SMERSH group, which is more insane than we could imagine even in one of those James Bond movies. So what are we going to do about it is my question. I mean, we can talk about it. I would suggest we stop participating and supporting it as a first start. We stop shopping at their institutions, stop banking with their institutions, cut them off economically. In other words, a kind of a BDS movement. And take certainly ditch our cell phones if we can, because they track us and trace us already with them. And that is our move. That is our move into the hive mind. As even in, you know, Mexico, I go down the street and I see, you know, every other person is staring into their cell phone.
Yeah. You think like you get away from that, like in a rural Mexico or something, and you can't.
No, you don't. It's phenomenal. You know, it's like it is changing the species. It's changing how we operate. It puts us in a hive mind, really. These people, you know, oh, look at all the power I have. You know, I can find out about this or that and the other. On the other hand, you're not dealing with reality in front of you. You know, you've gone to an artificial reality. It's kind of easing people towards this complete artificial reality, which, you know, coming from somebody my age who grew up in the time I grew up, it's not very attractive. I
mean, no. A good example is there's no way they could have pulled off the COVID-19 lockdowns in a pre-internet world, because people wouldn't have stood for it. They wouldn't have their amusements and their diversions. They wouldn't have e-commerce. You couldn't have grocery deliveries, you know, to your front door. You couldn't work from home, right? And so in a way, this technology has facilitated. This is why they couldn't unleash a program like this in the 90s, or even 20 years ago. They're able to do it now because everyone's online. They roped everyone into it, you know. And people aren't, you know, going doing physical activities anymore. I was just talking today about the baseball leagues. It's hard to get to field teams now because so many boys don't want to play baseball anymore. They're inside playing video games.
Yeah, that's a sad. It's a completely different world than the one I grew up in. You know, everybody was playing baseball and football and basketball and, you know, everybody. It was just the world we had, you know. I would suggest that that's healthier and that maybe we should and could take control of that. In other words, make a conscious decision. Okay, kids, you don't get a cell phone. Well, I won't. But nope, you don't get a cell phone. In other words, kind of, you know, play that role of a parent that I recall my parents playing, no, you can't do that. You know, I'm the boss here. You're the kid. This is good old fashioned discipline, I guess, you know, for the benefit of the kid. You're not being oppressive. You're not torturing the kid. You're trying to help the kid. Anyway, that maybe I'm so out of it that that's not even feasible. But I would suggest that our best chance of defeating this system is to realize that it is a technocratic system, and that what its components are, you know, AI, 5G, Internet of Things, Neuralink, all these things, and realize that this is just taking us down the wrong path. It's taking us to the path to extinction as a species, and they've mapped it out for us. You know, they tell us what they want to do, which is, as I understand, what Satanists have to do. They have to tell you, as part of the rules, that okay, you know, now you're going to go to hell if you do this. I say, you know, no, thank you. You know, get thee behind me, Satan. And I would say expel the Satanists if you want to keep your country. That's the only way I can see surviving this, you know, is to isolate and identify the people who are pushing it, like the Jewish billionaires, divest them of their money, send them, you know, Aliyah now, send them back to Israel, you know, or Antarctica, someplace like that.
Well, it's they've convinced a lot of people to think that they are indeed the problem. That's what the Club of Rome, you know, decided to do back way 50 years ago, was to convince people that they're the problem, and they're the Club Rome, you know, foresaw things like promoting things like a pandemic, a virus, environmental, you know, disaster, even alien invasion. And so they roll out these scenarios or these, I guess, you know, call them false flags or manufactured crises. How many people have been convinced not to have families, you know, because man is the problem, right? The whole war on families in the past, you know, 60 years. And the anti-natalist approach directed towards the West, by the way. It's usually it's the West, where Tucker Carlson got into trouble recently talking about replacement immigration, you know. And it seems as though they've convinced a whole lot of people sort of through degeneracy and just a lack of morale not to try to, you know, have families and form communities anymore. Nor do they create an environment that's favorable to that. You know, if you look at, obviously they shut with the pandemic, they shut down civil society, social life, so now people can't meet, so they meet online, you know.
We can't even see each other's faces anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you have your faces covered. You can't even enjoy a pretty face anymore, right?
It's horrible. I mean, we're in hell as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. The whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing of the 60s was, I think, very destructive to the family. I mean, you know, this really changes and modifies your lifestyle and behavior to make it very difficult to go back and have a traditional family. And the values that were promoted were actually quite dark. The New Age is a soft form of Satanism. I think if you look deeper into both books by McGowan, you know, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, you'll see quite a bit of Satanism and human sacrifice and blood sacrifice. And you realize the cult underpinnings, not only of the 60s sex, drugs, and rock and roll scene, but also these serial killers, these serial murders, very much there's a satanic cult underpinning to it. And I would suggest that we have that now, and that the gang stalking that I'm experiencing, and many, many others around the world, this cult is activated and animated. And it is a satanic cult. I see these people. And it's very dark. I mean, you know, these people work for the wrong side, and they're very mean-spirited people. And I would suggest that this spirit has infected America to a very large extent. So, you know, our next best strategy is to go back to church, get right with God, and try to live, according to the, Ten Commandments and the Two Commandments of Jesus, because the alternative is so grim. I mean, he gives freedom. Jesus gives freedom. But all he asks is, you know, a little fidelity in return and playing by the rules, you know, if you love me, keep my commandments kind of thing. We're in a spiritual crisis of enormous magnitude. And I would suggest that the 60s was very, very pivotal in that sense, too.
Yeah. Or it's almost like we're existing as a war on being.
Yeah.
War on reality. That's what you see with this whole transgender nonsense.
Yeah. And the identity. Yeah. You know, and you get these wearables and you know, you're going to enhance the species with, the super soldiers and then, you know, designer babies, et cetera. All this was, of course, projected by guys like H.G. Wells and Lord Bertrand Russell, who are part of the satanic cult one way or the other. That's the future that they've been working towards, you know, feverishly. So we have to realize there's an enemy in our midst, and it is a spiritual battle, and that the enemy is a spiritual entity, and that the entity has agents, and the agents can be identified, and they have attributes and characteristics. Now, of course, they were pretty hard on Jesus and the apostles, which gives the impression that they're all powerful. I don't feel that way. I do not feel that they're all powerful. I feel like, let's beat them. Let's beat them. You know, these people are devils. I think that, you know, Christians, yeah, we're supposed to be peaceful, but we also can stand firm and strong to protect our right to exist and the right of our civilization, which is crystalline civilization, and our families and our friends. I say let's beat them and figure out how to do it. And now's the time.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm glad to be talking to you. We can, you know, pull out some ideas.
Well, this is part of the good. I think what they've pulled off the past year, it's kind of what I was getting at earlier, is that they've exposed a lot. They've almost like they've walked in the room and they, here we are. And now what do we do? But at the same time, it's harder and harder for people to deny that there definitely is a conspiracy now. And the fact that something like this will wake so many more people up to the reality is on balance a good thing, because if they had just kind of been, say, you know, boiling, turning the heat up slower and, you know, slowly, no one would notice that they, for one reason or another, they felt the need to accelerate this past year. And again, like anything, that they people notice the temperature change rather quick and they go, whoa, something's definitely wrong here. I don't know what political agency people have at this point to deal with it. I don't think at the federal level there's any hope, at least right now. I think what we can hope for at the federal level is almost like for a collapse of authority and legitimacy, as I think we're getting that with the bumbling Biden administration. Perhaps at the state level, you do see signs of life at the state level. I think with at least with the United States is concerned, is you still can get some level of representation with state government. Just it's more practical, and you are seeing, you know, legislative moves, state laws banning, you know, vaccine mandates, various nullification measures are being passed in regards to gun control. Even their states, some of the states' responses to the transgender nonsense, although, you know, the Arkansas governor and Kristi Noem vetoing, I don't know what's going on there. I guess I have my suspicions because that's all part of the agenda. But nevertheless, the legislature did, see to it to pass the laws and also override a veto in Arkansas. So there is some movement at the state level. I don't know how this will play out in the long run, perhaps some level, you know, sort of a as the American empire collapses, you'll get a sort of a reversion back to more localized government, and maybe that'll foil their plot for the time being, because right now they're trying to centralize everything under the cover of a crisis, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very helpful to look at, you know, the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution as prototypes for what's happening now. It's the same group, the Masons and the Jews, really, and the international bankers. And, you know, how this was done then and what happened once the nation fell under their control. Mm-hmm. And your Elena's excellent book, Under the Sign of the Scorpion, leaves no doubt. I mean, tens of millions of people were slaughtered by these bloodthirsty devils, really. You know, he names the names and whatnot. And that is where we're going if the American people don't stand up. And my concern is, okay, we got a lot of good people in America and in the world, we have a lot of people with guns, but they don't know who their enemy is. And so they don't know who to resist. And so that's, okay, let's go to Catherine Austin Fitz. She says, basically, we're in the intervening confusing period between fiat currency, which the masters of the world, the Federal Reserve, etc., under Stanley Fisher, dual citizen with Israel and America, is heading that. They want to change from a fiat currency over to a digital currency, a go-direct system. It goes directly to our body with the cloud. Okay, that would turn us into cyborg slaves. But they're not quite there yet. So what they have to do is keep us distracted and fooled for long enough so that they can get their system in place, even while they hold on to the dollar system as the world reserve currency. So we're in that period. She says we're all in the invention room right now. And that, of course, they're feverishly working on buying up the world, which is what the Federal Reserve is doing now.
Yes.
For pennies on the dollar with their fiat currency. And this, by the way, was their original mandate, to buy up the world. Because, again, we're talking about these same insane Jews and Masons who are heading up this Federal Reserve.
Have you heard what BlackRock has been doing with the real estate, with housing?
Yeah, BlackRock, Lawrence Fink, another Jew.
Yeah.
No, tell me.
Oh, they're buying up huge swaths of entire developments of homes and then rent, putting them on the rental market. So this they were given money, billions, trillions of dollars in the wake of the financial crisis supposedly caused by COVID-19. Remember, they were given $6 trillion to pump up the market. And well, they've been heavily capitalized. And so you have BlackRock and other related or linked banking, financial firms, banking firms that are now bidding for residential homes. So individual home buyers are bidding against these outfits like BlackRock. That's why real estate prices are going high, despite the depressed economy. But the reality is, what's happened is individual home ownership is being marginalized, and you get these corporate-owned homes. That's why you have like Berkshire Hathaway involved in real estate. And what's happened is, again, there's this huge, again, centralization of finance. They're buying up all the real estate. Same way that Bill Gates is buying up farmland. He owns a quarter of a million acres in the United States now. You want someone like Bill Gates controlling food production. But yeah. You know,
Well, that's so he
yeah.
can have hamburgers and we'll have synthetic beef.
Yes,
Well,
yeah.
Lawrence Fink is head of BlackRock, and BlackRock and Vanguard apparently are the main owners of most of the corporations in the world.
Yes.
And BlackRock, up until even before the COVID hit, it was a $7 trillion, it owned seven tr and managed $7 trillion worth of assets, mostly pension funds. And yeah, they're in, according to Catherine Austin Fitz, they're in charge of doing the Great Reset. In other
And
words,
this is the real government. I mean, talk about who's controlling. You talk about corporate. This is the governance crisis we're facing. Catherine Austin Fitz talks about is because Willem Ingde wrote an article recently about this, about ESG. It's environment, social values, and governance, and how corporations acting on certain principles or ideas, they can actually enforce like the Green New Deal just to how they invest their money.
Yes,
You know, and they can also, they're also waging the culture war. They're the one pushing all the degeneracy and transgenderism. It's no laws are being passed, nor do they have to, because if corporations control all the assets, they can implement these things indirectly through human resource policies, what they invest in, what companies they invest in. When you say we invest in, our values determine our investments. Well, that's the problem. You're Luciferians. I don't want your values, and there's no accountability, because the good example is corporations. What happened down in Georgia with the Georgia election law and Major League Baseball punishing the state of Georgia for their election law, or the Coca-Cola, or Delta Airlines, or Salesforce, punishing the state of Indiana for passing a Defense of Marriage Act. You have these corporations that are dictating to governments what their laws should be. You know, who elected them? Who are they to do
Well, of
this?
course, yeah. This is the great American, scam of all scams. 1886, I guess it was Santa Clara Railroad versus Southern Pacific or something like that. And there was a lawsuit in which the rights of personhood were extended to corporations.
Yes.
But of course, corporations don't die, and they amass huge fortunes. So, none of us real persons can compete with these corporate persons, which then, simply rewrite the laws to advantage their own advantage.
Yeah, and it used to
But
be corporate charters were limited.
Right. Yeah,
The
they were
big
limited
corporate,
to a certain project, and then it was dissolved. But yeah, this whole series of laws, which is actually, there's a book that I used to actually use sometime in one of my classes. It's called the it was by Tom Hartman, the I can't remember the name, but it had to do with the theft of human rights and the rise of corporate dominance in the world. And he outlined this whole history over time, in which corporations then became the dominant power. But of course, these are laws that are in violation of the U.S. Constitution. So, based on our own Constitution, these could be rescinded if we had good politicians.
Oh, yeah,
If
simple thing like I heard Dr. Joseph Farrell suggested a simple law would be in order for a corporation to have a charter in the United States, they'd have to swear an oath to defend or to live by the Bill of Rights, meaning they couldn't censor. They'd have to respect the First Amendment. And that would solve all this the censorship you're seeing, the cancel culture that's being meted out by social media companies like Google or Facebook, or so that would solve that problem. Or banning have a law that bans data mining. There goes the business model for all these companies, because you could just ban data mining, and then that wouldn't be a market. It wouldn't be a business model for these. But you'll never get those laws because the corporations are in control now, evidently.
Yeah, absolutely. And the book, by the way, is called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance mm-hmm. and the Theft of Human Rights by Tom Hartman. But yeah, that's very pivotal issue in our country. And of course, the Money Masters series of movies does a great job of talking about this economic war that's been going on in this country. So yeah, it really gets back down to, who gets the rights and who has the power based on, manipulation of the laws. But in the meanwhile, I mean, these guys are running for the goalposts, and they're very close to in their agenda. And they have the power, and they've got most of the public, snookered into believing that they need to stay in their homes or social distance or wear a mask or whatever. And they, they may well have unleashed this bioweapon on us. So we need to track down the crime and punish the criminals first, and deal with the realities on the ground. And of course, that means cutting through the lies, which is not an easy assignment.
No,
no, but it's possible.
So the articles that you cite, they're the Gang Stalking website or the 9/11 New World Order?
Well, it's the Gang Stalking Mind Control Cults.com website. Yeah.
Okay, and in those, it's you detail sort of one is more chronological about
kind of a timeline of the late 50s to 2002 in the article from Operation Garden Plot to the Phoenix Program and Chaos to Rex 84 to 9/11 to DHS to U.S. NORTHCOM. I did talking about this increasing military police state. Which of course serves the corporatocracy and moves into total military dictatorship and martial law. And I would suggest that we're pretty close to that. So we have all these policies and programs that the military, and it's abuse of power. It's authoritative government, just taking more power unto itself, originally in more of a secretive manner. And now it's coming out in the open. And of course, then factor in the technology with the incredible technologies available and the mind control. And we really have a challenge to roll back this abusive assault of corporate power. And I would suggest this elite satanic influence as well.
And because all this, what you cited, this is a problem. Reaction solution, right? They set up the crisis.
Yeah.
They create the reaction, and they pose as the solution to the problem. That's why you have the militarization of the police. That's right. This, you have to deal with the crisis. Well, the crisis and the dissidents is a result of, some foreign war or some, if they didn't have the foreign war, wouldn't have the protest. And then you wouldn't have the problem, but they like the problem because the problem comes with justification, not only for the continued existence, but also for amassing more power and creating the dictatorial system that they want to control everybody. It's an old game.
It's an old game, and the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, Protocol 13 says, unbeknownst to the stupid goyim, we've been stage managing history for centuries. Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at the series of documents leading up to this plandemic scamdemic, they've scripted it. And if you look at, again, this series of books going back to Lord Bertrand Russell and H.G. Wells that Jay Dyer has recently brought out, that's scripting it over the last 100 years. But then if you go to the Jewish Talmud, you can see the scripting going back even further. So this particular group, they call themselves the people of the book. And they tell you what they're going to do. They brag about it, So if you are a reader, like E. Michael Jones is and others of us, you can read their own work and Henry Ford wrote a book about it, you know, in 1920, called The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem. And this is not going away. You know, this problem is not going away because they want the entire earth. And they're very clever about ways to take it over. And so in a way, we have there's a law, kind of a principle in biology, the law of competitive exclusion, that no two species can occupy the same ecological niche indefinitely. So almost you need to look at our species as constantly competing for the same ecological niche, and one's going to win over the other. At least they're at war with us, so we need to wake up and figure out that they are at war with us. What are their tools? What are their objectives? And then unless we want to just all get wiped out, we have to figure out a counter strategy. We have to resist. We have to win because we outnumber them significantly, you know. And I would argue that we're just as smart or smarter. But we don't have this satanic collective hive mind.
Yeah, so, yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why can't we all just get along, right?
Exactly. Yeah, Rodney said it all, you know. Why can't we all just get along? But, you know, the fact is that we have this historic issue, you know. Yeah. And for that reason, you know, 109 nations have expelled these people from their countries, because whenever they come into a country as a group, they form their own secret government, their, you know, a state within a state, and then they actively work to sabotage and destroy the nation. And, you know, fifth column group, Trojan horse, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that is our reality, spiders and flies.
If you doubt that, just read the Jonathan Pollard interview.
Yeah, that's right.
That he gave from Tel Aviv. So,
yeah, he said it should work for Israel, you know, and it should be a spy for
yes.
Israel. And in fact, most of them are, because they are automatically Sionim.
Sionim, yes, well, yes.
They automatically are working for Mossad or Israeli Defense Forces just by virtue of the fact that anywhere in the world they're a Jew, they're working for Israel, they're working for their own people.
It is a suspicion that Zionism naturally creates, because that's. No.
That's what Jonathan Pollard said. I mean, it's more than a suspicion. It's a reality, you know.
And it's an interesting title. E. Michael Jones' book, he calls it the Jewish revolutionary spirit, meaning that it can animate or infect non-Jews. Because to the extent that we imbibe or internalize their values and their ideas become normative, and then we become agents in a sense too, and that's something where the goyim have to look at themselves. They have to, you know, instead of saying we're victims, or, you know, you have free will, you have to identify it and act accordingly. And so if we internalize their values, their ideas, we're complicit in it.
That's a very good point, yeah. And you can make the case that, you know, we're all Jews now because they've Judified the culture to such an extent.
Someone called it the 20th century, the Jewish century. You're a
Slutskind,
and that's because their values became normative. You know, it's so
that's
much
right.
So, you
know, another book, An Empire of Their Own, which they say, okay, they created their own world in Hollywood, you know. But, yeah, this is the trajectory. And what is the counter to that, of course, is Christianity. It would be very easy to be, like you say, pulled into that mindset. And, you know, Lord knows, you know, many of us have, including myself at certain points in my life, you know, to go along to get along, you know, and adopt that kind of worldview even. It's very easy to do that. And what's the antidote to that? It is the, you know, Christianity, which is why, of course, they hate the Christian church to such an extent. And they will attack the Christian church to such an extent. That is their number one rival, their number one enemy, Christ, the church, and Christians.
Yeah.
So that's our best hope, is that we will have a Christian enough nation to resist this by virtue of our spiritual maturity, I guess. For lack of a better word.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think we covered it.
We sure did.
Yes. Great. Okay. Well, so people follow your work at your, can you repeat your websites again?
Yeah. I'm, you know, 30-year geography professor, retired. Now I have 5 websites. The one I've been working on most, with over 1600 posts now, is gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com. And also you can use Global Gestapo to get there, globalgestapo.com. And then the others are 911nwo.com, naturalclimatechange.org, which completely blows away out of the water this stupid global warming climate change fraud that they're using in the UN to, you know, commandeer control of all economies. Another one is San Luis Valley Waterwatch.com. And then lastly, my musical website, because I like to play guitar, banjo, and piano, is ericcarlstrom.com. That's the only one that has anything for sale, and those are my CDs, etc. And I also have a project there called Lifeline Project, essential information, insights, and healing music for illegally targeted citizens. And as a targeted individual myself, I've investigated this program, which I think now is going to be rapidly expanded to all humans. And therefore, I think it's something people might want to just delve into. In other words, it's the headlines from my huge gang stalking mind control cults.com. In about 5 hours, you have a series of readings from this website with the music selections. So it's relatively, hopefully, easy to listen to and get the gist of what are some of the weapons that are being used against humanity now. The directed energy weapons, the neuro weapons, the gang stalking. They have a lot of tricks up their sleeve.
They also, they seem to hate music too.
Yeah, and so, well, they hate good music. They hate, yeah. They love bad music.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I meant, but good music. I mean, actually, yeah. Good music. But,
they hate beauty. They hate beauty and they hate beautiful music, you know, so they give us crap. Excuse my language, but that's been the case since the 60s too, you know, where we had all this heavy metal, acid rock coming in about that time. And there is a spiritual component to music, for sure. It can bring you up pretty darn high, and it can take you down awfully low.
Yes, it can get you down. Yeah. And different types of music have different centers of gravity.
That's right. So anyway, great, Tim. And, you know, this has been fun. We cover the waterfront, don't we?
Yes. So, okay, listen, yeah, great. Thanks so much. I'll post as soon. I'll just send you the link then.
Great.
Good night then.
Okay, you have a good one, Tim.
Take care. Bye-bye.